Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to the Monday edition, the Feel Free edition. Kevin's in South Carolina right now. Oh, boy. And Danny is here. It's great to have Danny on board. It'd be great to talk sports today as opposed to Friday. Yeah, so it's great to have you on board. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, of course, is our sponsor every Monday. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Sunbury Motor Studio, that's where I reside. While some people are being turned over and baked on a beach, I'm here at the Sunbury Motor Studio, where I love to be. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and the Hilshers General Store hotline open at 1-800-795-9565, powered by Hilshers General Store, located 7 miles south of Salem's Grove, routes 11 and 15. You can always go to www.hilshersstore.com. Maybe we'll call somebody in South Carolina today just to ruin their day and see how they're doing. Sure. Brackets are out. We're going to dissect them, go region by region. Danny and I will do that for you. Also, today is the first day of spring practice for the Nittany Lions and Bill O'Brien on Penn State and spring ball coming up. A lot going on. But first, above the noise, here's Dan Patrick. And we welcome everyone. Steve Jones Show here on this Monday. It's great to have you with us. Danny, it's good to have you on board.
Glad to be here, Steve.
And the NCAA tournament is out, and Kevin has hightailed it out of town.
I couldn't have picked a better time.
Well, no. Now, we're going to break down the brackets and so forth and have a little fun with this. I have, with one exception, I have no problem with anything the committee did.
What's that problem?
The only one exception. And I do not quite get the celebration of Middle Tennessee being in this thing. Over and over we've heard about non-conference schedule, blah, 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 blah. Okay, now I'm going to ask everybody a question out there. And I think just by asking the question, you know what the answer is. Who had more top 100 wins this year? Middle Tennessee State or Penn State?
I'm going to guess Penn State.
Yes, sir. Middle Tennessee State had one top 100 win all season. They beat Ole Miss. Beat them by two. Now, if you're going to go over and over and over with me about, well, you know, we have to prove, you know, to everybody, the non-conference schedule, you got to do something. What's their non-conference schedule? They only played four teams in the top 100. Two of them they lost by 15 points or better. Now, I know they're 28-5. I understand that. But still, that's the only one I have that I look at that raised an eyebrow. The only one. Now, who do you replace them with? I don't know. But that's the only one I looked at and thought, eh. And they're not the last team in. I mean, obviously, LaSalle and... you know, LaSalle is obviously one of those teams that you look at and say, okay. Because they're a 13 seed. But we are very, very pleased to be joined by the head basketball coach of Bucknell, Dave Paulson. Dave, first of all, congratulations on what your team accomplished by winning the Patriot League Championship.
Thanks, Steve. It's a great honor. Our guys, really answered every challenge and had a bull's eye on their back the entire season and really did a great job. And came through with a terrific defensive effort in the championship game.
No question about it. And that's been your staple all season long, Dave. You've been able to win games because of defense. Have you watched your team, I mean, defensively, we talked about this back in December. We talked about it in January. Did you even see your team play even better defense as it went down the stretch? Just those subtle things a coach would notice.
Yeah, you know, we really have gotten better. And we've been better at, tweaking what we do within a game or for different opponents based on their strengths and things like that. And our guys have really done a great job of recognizing that. I thought in the championship game, Lafayette's got Tony Johnson, a first-team All-League point guard, who was averaging 22 points a game over his last 8 or 9 games. And I thought Stephen Casper and Ryan Frazier just did a phenomenal job on him. And then Bryson Johnson and Cameron Ayers, like, fight through all the screens. And we did a great job defending the three-point line. So the guys have really emerged defensively. And obviously, you know, we'll have to be even better yet against Butler.
No question about that. Now I want to ask you a question that is going to go back to last year. You knew what you had coming back. Did you put together a non-conference schedule for this week coming up in mind? You can reveal this now if you wish.
Oh, I think there's no question about it. And part of it was we even did 2 years in advance when we knew it'd be really, really challenging to get really marquee home games. And so 2 years ago, after we went to the NCAA tournament, when Mike and Bryson and Joe were sophomores, we were able to start some series on the road with George Mason and LaSalle, so we could have some marquee home games. And we had some flexibility just in terms of our home-and-home contests with Kent State and, you know, even get going on the road and losing at Princeton. But LaSalle and George Mason and people like that, not to mention getting in the tournament, I don't even know what the name of the tournament is we were in. It was a 2K Classic, you know, with a chance to play Purdue and then Niagara, which won their regular season in their league, and New Mexico State, which is going to the NCAA tournament on their league. So we knew we'd have some really, really good competition.
Well, you've done that. Now you get ready for this. You mentioned being in the tournament 2 years ago, and there is a routine to being in the tournament, getting there, the open practice, the press conference part, then obviously usually going to a high school or whatever to get your real work in practice-wise. The fact that you've gone through this and these guys have gone through that part and know the routine, how much is that an advantage today compared to what it was even a couple of years ago?
Well, I think it's going to be an advantage for our guys, more than anything, I don't think, hopefully they won't be in awe of the experience. And I don't think they'll be stopping to ask for autographs on the way in to play our first-round opponent. It's still, the logistics are still hard. Like, we just finalized how we're getting down there maybe a half hour ago and still trying to secure a practice site for our, you know, our non-open practice. And everything's kind of sped up because we've got the 12:30 or the 12:40 game on right. Thursday afternoon. But, from the coaching staff perspective and from the players' perspective, we have, the vast majority of guys have an expectation of what will occur. And so that'll allow us to, hopefully just get down there and go about our business.
Yeah, the next part is people don't realize this. The fact you're in Kansas City, there's actually some pluses to it because one of the more difficult parts is actually dealing with the ticket part of it. Little things like that. You're a basketball coach. You just want to coach and play basketball.
Right. And we're actually in Lexington, Steve.
Lexington I meant. Sorry, you're at Rupp.
Yeah. But there is the ticket. 2 years ago we were in D.C., which was great. But tickets, because we were so close to so many people from here and alums, the ticket deal was more of a half, not a hassle, because that's a good problem to have, but
exactly,
you dealt with more logistics and we still have tickets in our block left to sell, so people can still call a campus box office and purchase tickets if they're so inclined. So that takes a little bit of that frenzy out of it.
I've done a game, obviously, in Rupp before, and it's a great arena, but it's also a huge arena as well. You're talking about 22, 23,000. You played in big arenas, but at the same time, I don't know what the crowd's going to be like at 12:40 in the afternoon either. How important will be the 1 hour you get in there for the open practice?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that it'll be helpful. But, you know, our guys, as you said, like we, you know, we played in Missouri, which is a huge arena. You know, Penn State is a, you know, the Bryce Jordan is a huge venue. These guys played in the Verizon Center 2 years ago. We played in the Carrier Dome a year ago. And again, this is a veteran group that hopefully shouldn't be too shook by that. So it'll be good. We'll get a lot of shooting up in Rupp and kind of get our sea legs there. But more importantly is the level of preparation that we put forth in practice the 2 days leading up to it, and just in terms of what we have to do to have success against, you know, to me, the gold standard in kind of mid-major basketball in the Butler.
Just one quick story. Penn State goes in there to play, and of course you look in there and all the Kentucky numbers that are retired and so forth that are all banners that are up there. In the corner, though, they have these two Kentucky Thoroughblades banners for winning the AHL Division Championship. I said it kind of takes away from the ambiance of the place.
Well, I've never been in Rupp, so I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah. Let's get to Butler now. Three guys that average in double figures, and when Ronnie Clark has been in the lineup, they've been a little bit different team. He certainly is back in the lineup. What kind of balance does Brad Stevens have on the floor?
Well, as you said, they are balanced because they got Clark and Dunham who can really shoot the three. They got Smith inside who's a very good 6'11 big guy. But I think kind of the X factors for them as I'm watching tape of them is the kid Roosevelt Jones and Kyle Marshall. They're 3 men and 4 men, and they're basically, we haven't seen guys like that in quite some time. Now, we saw those types of guys in our non-league schedule, but Joe Willman, and I think we talked last week on the show, having to chase effectively a guard around who shoots threes, and now he's going to have to, keep a big, huge, athletic, rim-rattling guy in Kyle Marshall off the glass and off the blocks, and at times he'll be on Roosevelt Jones, who's, neither of those two kids shoot threes, but they're just terrific off the bounce, and they're very, very explosive on the glass. So it's a different kind of team than what we've played since, probably Missouri.
And obviously a team toughened up by a really good Atlantic 10 as well. On top of that, what about you're looking with Smith, and you mentioned Jones already being an X factor, but Smith's another guy, high percentage guy, makes some plays for them, not a big three-point guy, but scores.
Well, he does, and he's 6'11", so, and he's physical, and they bring some other physical bigs off the bench, so
right.
It's just what you're getting, and again, in the Atlantic 10, probably Butler's not considered to be exceptionally athletic, but they're going to be slightly more athletic than we are, and yet by the same token, they're going to be sound and smart and tough and execute a game plan, so... to some degree, we've modeled who we are and how we play very similar to Butler. They just might have a little bit more size and athleticism than us. Having said that, I think we've got some really good experience, and these guys have played in big games, and we have, I think we'll have the best player on the floor. So
yeah.
I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah, it's always a good place to start when you feel like you have the best guy. The next part is, what about, we have so much tape today. I mean, tape's all over the place, you can get it. But at the same time, you don't have an advance on who you're getting. You find out like everybody else does on TV. So how quickly were you able to acquire Butler tape and start to get a real feel for them, Dave?
Well, nowadays, everything's online. And you can download the games if you belong to a group called Synergy, which we do.
Right.
So we've got, I got 14 Butler tapes on my computer. So you can watch, you can watch more than you can really use. And, And between me and my staff, we'll, you know, combined, we'll probably have watched all 14 Butler games and have formulated game plan and all the advanced statistics we have access to. So we'll have plenty of information, and then it's a matter of just distilling it to the three or four things that our guys need to focus on, and then, more importantly, going out and executing it.
Finally, I'll ask you this before I let you go. What was it like between the win over Lafayette and then just the knowledge that you were going to be in? What were the last few days like leading up to Selection Sunday, knowing that you had accomplished something in a one-bid league where there was so much pressure, to then knowing you were in no matter what happened?
Well, it was great, you know, and it was kind of, you know, and unfortunately a couple of people said to me, you know, you look more relieved than excited on Wednesday night. And unfortunately, that was my feeling. And, you know, you should just have this sense of euphoria. But it was, to some degree, a little sense of relief because, you know, we had the bullseye on our back, and we knew we had arguably one of the best teams, if not the best team ever, to play at Bucknell, and just wanted those guys to be able to, you know, compete in the NCAA tournament. But because we had a few more days than we had the last time, the championship game used to be on a Friday, but now it's been moved back to a Wednesday. It gave us Thursday and Friday with our guys. We went to a nice lunch. We were in spring break and watched some of Big Ten and Big East and ACC tournament games and just kind of decompress. And it gave our guys a chance to kind of bask in it for a couple of days. But then we were able to really get to work and have two really hard competitive practices on Saturday and Sunday so that, you know, we're continuing to get some work done. Where 2 years ago, we won on Friday, we took Saturday off, Sunday was a light practice, and all of a sudden, you're into game prep for your first-round game. So it's a good feeling. We had an unbelievable turnout last night at the Campus Theater here in Lewisburg. I see 350 people, and, you know, a standing room only. It must have been 400 people there with the band, and just a real nice tribute to our guys. And now it's time to get down to work.
Dave, there are 347 teams in Division I college basketball. As of today, only 68 have a chance to win the national championship. You're one of them. Thank you so much for the time. Best of luck Thursday at Rupp.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Dave Paulson with us, head basketball coach at Bucknell. Great that he took some time to join us on our NCAA preview. Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, coming up next half hour. First of all, the news coming up here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, well, Pennsylvania did well with Bucknell making the tournament as an 11 seed. Villanova's obviously in. LaSalle's in. They play tomorrow night. And also Temple's in. Out west, it is Pitt that is in. We're joined by Tony DeFazio of the Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, welcome. It's great to have you back.
Always happy to join you guys. Always happy to join you.
All right, so let's get to Pitt-Wichita State. Pitt got a terrible matchup. Pure and simple. What was the thought? In an 8-9, you're going to get that. But what was the thought down there with Pitt got?
Well, you know, they didn't feel bad for themselves. They weren't feeling sorry for themselves. I thought you might see some of that. I thought you might see some terse words from Jamie Dixon, but you didn't see that either. I think the players are trying not to look at that one next to Gonzaga's name in the next round, because I think they love the idea of getting a chance to play that team. Obviously, that's the last thing the head coach wants his players thinking about, at least until Friday. They've got a matchup with Wichita State. This is a team they've played before. The two seniors on this Pitt team have played against Wichita State before. Trey Woodall, in fact, started the game and had a pretty good game. They played them in a preseason tournament in Kansas City 4 years ago. Pitt won the game by 11 points. It was a pretty close matchup until late in the game. you know, it's going to be an interesting matchup, obviously. Wichita State's the kind of a team that knows how to take advantage of these kind of matchups, and I think you just said it, in an 8-9, you know, this is the kind of game you get. And again, I think what Pitt's players, especially the young guys, and remember, they start two freshmen, are going to have to be focused on Wichita State and not looking forward to trying to prove themselves against Gonzaga in the next round, because I think that is a danger. You know, I don't know if they're wearing a chip on their shoulder right now, Steve, but I can tell you this. I think the committee, not only to Pitt, there are some teams who didn't get into this tournament for the same reason, but they sent a pretty clear message. We pay attention to your non-conference schedule. And Jamie Dixon in the past has done a good job of scheduling mid-majors who nonetheless have good RPIs. This year, it was an atrocious non-conference schedule. There were some things out of Pitt's control, some games that fell apart because of them going to the ACC and so forth. But nonetheless, Pitt played a lot of teams with 300-plus RPIs, and that gets you, at the end of the day, a number 8 seed in a matchup against Wichita State.
Tony, I just don't like the matchup. I just think, it's the NCAA tournament, so your matchup, regardless of round, should be tough anyway. But they still get in, and considering they were in the CBI last year where they won the title, I mean, this is still a leap back for them.
Yeah, it is, and the players talked about that. I mean, again, the first question that was asked of Trey Woodall yesterday was, you know, do you feel upset at the seed? And he said, guys, we were playing in the CBI last year in front of a couple hundred people. We're happy to be playing in the NCAA tournament. And I think there was some truth to that. I also think that they feel a little bit slighted about this. However, you know, again, just like you said, you know, you go out, and if you're slighted, the way to overcome that is to win the basketball game. Wichita State's interesting. They're old. A lot of junior college transfers. And I think the thing that gave them a big advantage in the Missouri Valley this year is their size up front. They've got a couple of 6'8 guys. They've got a 7-foot shot blocker, a Nigerian kid who averages almost 5 rebounds. He only plays about 15 minutes a game. So this guy obviously gets his work in when he's on the floor. But that was a huge advantage in a conference like the Missouri Valley. I do think that Pitt's size up front should negate that somewhat, and I think it'll come down to a matchup between the veteran guards for Wichita State and Trey Woodall and James Robinson for Pitt, who have done a pretty good job against high scorers this year, but grinders have kind of given them a bit of a, I don't know if they've given them a problem, but that's the kind of game that Pitt plays, is a grind-it-out kind of a game, especially their backcourt, and they're going to have to do that against guys for Wichita State who are very used to doing the same thing. I think it should be a great matchup, and again, I think, you know, Pitt can maybe negate Wichita State's strength, but we'll see. I really think it's going to be a great matchup, but I hope people, because of the name Wichita State, don't just assume that, you know, if you're not a college basketball fan, you might assume that that's a cakewalk, and it's anything but.
Greg Marshall is an excellent coach, and he has been turning out some excellent teams the last 3 years. What about the altitude factor playing in Salt Lake City?
You know, again, that's something that Pitt really didn't discuss yesterday. Is it a problem? You know, I don't know. It's a problem if you lose. That's when you hear it mentioned. But they're going to get out there as early as they can and get as many practices in. You know, I think that's, you know, the main thing that they can do. Pitt's played in the West quite a bit in this tournament over the past, 10 years or so. They haven't played in Salt Lake City in the past, though. So that could be an issue, I suppose. Pitt's a very deep team, though. You don't see a whole lot of guys playing more than 30-some minutes a game or so, and I think that could come into play as well, you know, when you're talking about altitude.
Yeah, because depth is an important factor. I think that's what I'm driving at in the question. If you had depth, then it really becomes irrelevant in terms of altitude, because you can freely substitute, and Jamie's done a lot of that this year. Is there less talk about Pitt's failure, loose term, okay, to get past the Sweet 16 level because they're back in the tournament after being out?
You know, honestly, there really isn't. What the talk has really been about is, no question, that is, you know, now that they're back in the dance, you know, a lot of the questions have been, okay, is this the year that they get past it? Now, after the seedings came out and everyone sees Gonzaga, you know, on that, you know, in that, well, I guess it's the third round now. I still say second round, but
right.
The, you know, the second game of the first weekend, I don't know what it is, whatever. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The round of 32, how's that? If Pitt gets to the Sweet 16 this year, I think everybody's going to be thrilled, and I think you'll see a lot of that. Okay, they finally beat a seed higher than them. I think that's really what it comes down to is, you know, Pitt is, you know, like you said, failure being a loose term, they haven't gotten past the Sweet 16, only the one time, and even more than that, though, Steve, they haven't beaten a higher seed than themselves,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to have a chance to do that, certainly. If they can get past that first-round game, they'll have a chance to play the number one seed, and, you know, again, I don't know how you can be too critical if they do get to the Sweet 16 this year. They'll have to be the number one on the way to do it, so I think that's kind of the talk, is if they win two games, this is a successful season. If they win one game, you sort of shrug your shoulders. If they bounce in the first round, it's, you know, same old failure in March. I'm not sure how fair that is, but I think that's right. What the thinking is.
Sure. And for the uninitiated, Salt Lake City's 4,200 feet. You know, not quite a mile high, but still 4,200 feet. Elvis Dumervil, the buy by Dumervil's agent or the Broncos allowed him to be released. He is not going to resign with the Broncos. What about the interest between the Steelers and Dumervil and vice versa?
Haven't really heard much on that. Heard some interest from the Ravens with Dumervil. You'd think he'd be a tremendous fit in Pittsburgh, especially Harrison, you know, moving on. This is a guy who, if he's not in his prime, Steve, he can't be that far removed from it. Then, you know, again, this is a position I think that the Steelers sort of depend upon for their defense. And, apparently Jason Worlds is the guy that they're going to throw out there and expect him to play well. Not a lot of talk about Dumervil. The only free agent name that we've really heard who you could consider a top-level guy was Jake Long. And apparently there was an ESPN piece that said the Steelers had tried to reach out to him to bring him in on the offensive line, which I thought was a little bit of a surprise. Perhaps I'm looking at this team a little bit different than the general manager is, but that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, and if he ended up signing with the St. Louis Rams, what about Ahmad Bradshaw?
There is a name where you are hearing some interest. Mike Tomlin danced around that question yesterday. He spoke to some reporters yesterday, and that name came up. And, you know, and if you could read his face or whatever, it did seem like the way he danced around the question that perhaps there is some interest there. So he did specify that they definitely need to sign a running back. And he didn't say draft or acquire. He said sign a running back. So Steven Jackson is signed elsewhere. Beanie Wells has come in for a visit, but Ahmad Bradshaw, I think, would be a step up from Wells.
Yeah.
Again, you're not looking at a guy who's going to carry your team, but, you know, Pittsburgh has a couple of capable backs, just not capable of starting. Bradshaw might be a good addition to that mix.
And at least Bradshaw has played in the biggest of big games. Beanie Wells hasn't played in a big game since Ohio State, and you can even debate that. Anybody else on the free agent radar that might get a sniff from the Steelers?
You know, the kind of guys they're looking at, Steve, are guys that are going to fill roles. They officially brought back Matt Space, who played here for 3 years, a tight end who's a nice secondary tight end. Certainly not a guy who's going to replace Heath Miller in your starting lineup. They had another tight end visiting, Kellen Davis. Victor Butler, an outside linebacker from the Cowboys, was in visiting as well. And remember, Steve Breston visited about 2 weeks ago, and nothing has come of that either. So as far as, you know, free agent signings that you would imagine coming in and playing a big role, really the only name out there right now seems to be Ahmad Bradshaw.
And it's interesting. You'll see the teams, this happens every year, when they are desperate on personnel, that's when the big contracts go. And then the rest of them start filling in spots based on need after that. That's where the Steelers are right now. 8 in a row for the Penguins. What has come together?
Their defense, I think. I think their responsibility to defense, that's what they talked about yesterday after the win. They've given up 5 goals in their last 5 games. They've played some pretty good teams, Boston twice. one of the best teams in the league, frankly. So I think it's really just attention to detail defensively, and that's sort of been the biggest thing for them. They're taking less penalties, and they're doing a better job of killing them. And, you know, that one of those old hockey axioms is the best way to kill a penalty is not to take a penalty. And they've killed 11 of their last 12 over the past five games. More impressive than the 11 of 12 is probably the 12 itself. And two of those have been delay of game penalties, which is, you know, just a misplay rather than a lack of discipline. So 10 discipline-type penalties over the last five games, you can win doing that.
I was just in Chicago last week. I can tell you straight out, the Blackhawks own that town. it is interesting because, I mean, obviously Derrick Rose is not back yet for the Bulls. The Bears, of course, did not have the greatest of seasons, and the Cubs are the Cubs, the White Sox are the White Sox. The Blackhawks own that thing. In this 48-game schedule, do the Penguins and Blackhawks play?
They don't. They don't. So they wouldn't meet unless they were playing for the
Stanley
for the,
Cup.
For the Stanley Cup. So
wow.
that would make things a lot of fun.
Wow, that's interesting. That would be a fun Stanley Cup final. If I'm NBC, I'm lighting candles right now over at St. Patrick's.
Yeah, no question. That would not be bad. I suppose NBC probably likes Boston, Chicago, too, but you're right. Pittsburgh, Chicago. Mario Lemieux used to talk about how that was one of the greatest places to play, and he just loved the crowd in Chicago Stadium, and just the way that they responded was something that he always talked about a lot during his playing days. So I guess it's back to that kind of style now, or back to that kind of passion, I should say.
But you know what? I think NBC would love Pittsburgh, Chicago for this reason. Chicago, of course, being the market it is. Patrick Kane's a marketable guy. Sidney Crosby is a marketable guy. The Bruins, despite being a really good hockey team, don't really have what you have marketable guys. Chara's not a marketable guy. Crosby, of course, is the face of the league.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Patrick Kane, Crosby would be a fantastic guy. That's the kind of a thing that you root for a seven-game series as well. No question. Those are two faces, you're right, that NBC would love to have on those promos. Absolutely.
As always, Tony, thanks so much. Appreciate that, and look forward to talking to you next week, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. We'll come back with more. Today's show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can go to purdyinsurance.com. Back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You just don't think about insurance. You buy a home, you take out a policy, and you forget about it until something happens and you need it. Then you think about insurance a lot. My agent recommended insurance from Selective. Insurance for our home and property, jewelry, even the food in our refrigerator. Selective thinks about everything, so I don't have to.
Selective. Response is everything. Get to know us at Selective.com.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PurdyInsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
All right, welcome back. And Kevin submitted his bracket, Danny. I'm a bit concerned he has the Steelers winning.
He already submitted a bracket?
Well, but there are also eight teams on here he has advancing that didn't make the tournament. I think it's junk. Does he know? I mean, I asked him last week if he knew if the ball was stuffed or inflated. He pondered. So, he's on vacation this week. So Danny's here. Danny, you're here, what, today, tomorrow, Wednesday?
Yes, sir.
All right. It's great to have you on board. What a thrill for Bucknell. You know, the big event they had yesterday, the crowd that came out. Now going to one of the more storied arenas in all of college basketball. You know, the irony, I was telling Davis, you know, the Kentucky Thoroughblades of the AHL. Rupp Arena is not owned by the University of Kentucky. It's owned by the city of Lexington. I mean, it is a community arena. And it is, when it's packed with Kentucky Blue, it is a pretty special place to be in.
I've been lucky enough to go once, and it was pretty special. Went to their opener in 2009, 2010. Saw them beat up on Morehead State when they had Kenneth Fareed.
Yeah, and that's something else. But they'll go there. And the reason I asked him the question about playing in an arena that size has nothing to do with anything except it might not be filled. And when it's not filled, it looks a little more cavernous. That was the point I was trying to make. You know, this place seats 23,000. There are not going to be 23,000 people there at 12:40 in the afternoon.
Yeah, that's the big key, is because it's such an early morning game, you know, because so many people are working, maybe not as much in Lexington as it is in more major cities, but it's tough for people to get out there. So the early morning, you know, the environment and the crowd isn't necessarily as large as it would be if it's, say, a 7 o'clock tip.
I was amazed, though, Danny, 2 years ago doing the game out in Tucson, which was a 2 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time start, but they were on Pacific time at that point. It was an 11 o'clock in the morning start, and the McHale Center, I think, seats 12,000, something like that, 12, 13,000. Yeah, it was 9, 10,000 people there at 11 o'clock in the morning. I was amazed. I was amazed by the crowd that was there. That really struck me to see that. It really told me a lot as to why Tucson gets regionals. And that really struck me. Now, this is a 23,000 seat venue. Now, Thompson Bowling Arena in Tennessee. You want to know why Thompson Bowling Arena has 24,500 seats?
Tell me.
Because the mandate was they had to have 1,000 more seats in Kentucky.
Makes sense. Did you happen to see where Kentucky's going to be playing their first round of the NIT?
Are they playing in the campus gym, or?
They have to go to Robert Morris.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Nope.
So Calipari going back to his Pittsburgh
roots.
Louisville
will be one of the teams playing in Rupp Arena.
So Calipari goes back to his Pittsburgh roots.
Yes, he does.
Wow. That's good for John. Remember where he came from. He was an assistant at Pitt for years. That's why I said that. He's a Pittsburgh guy.